hard, heavy, and hell. Badass music for badass listeners.
Hey everybody, this is Stephen St. James of Rough Cut with the Hard, Heavy, and Hair Show with Pariah Burr.
Stephen St. James has a soulful singing voice that has taken him from Motown's hard rock band Cagney and the Dirty Rats with a pre-Bullet Boys Mark Turian to the band Sarge, where he co-wrote some of what would become Rough Cut's hits with guitarist Chris Hager, to finally, just in the last couple of years, reuniting with Hager and fronting Rough Cut itself with a revitalized lineup. His voice brings back to hard rock a soulfulness, a vulnerability, but also a street corner toughness that's lacking from many bands these days. Stephen's singing ability is outdone only by his humility and kindness. I met Stephen at the very first performance of the current Rough Cut lineup in 2019. We've been friends ever since. It turns out, we realized recently, Stephen is the only member of Rough Cut I haven't previously interviewed, so we decided to rectify that in what would become part interview, part hangout. We talked about his time with Motown, the new Rough Cut song Black Rose, which he co-wrote, his singing and songwriting career, how he gets along with original Rough Cut vocalist Paul Shortino, and more.
Become a hard, heavy, and hair backstage VIP at patreon.com/pariahrocks. Support the creation of the Hard, Heavy, and Hair Show. And get access to exclusive content, early previews, and even help program the show. Hard, Heavy, and Hair patrons get free stuff no one else gets. For as little as $1 a show. Patreon.com/PariahRocks.
I like your shirt.
Well, thank you.
I think I'm too close for you to see my shirt, but here.
Oh, nice.
You know, I'm a fan, so I, you know, it's just like, oh, I'll wear this. Then I saw the cameras, because I've got the computer right up on my face. I'm at the dining room table, and it's like, okay, I don't want to move it back. I just want to leave everything where it is, because I'll break something.
Well, Stephen St. James, welcome to the Hard, Heavy, and Hair Show.
All right, thank you.
I know we're both, so you mentioned the shirt. I know we're both whiskey fans.
Right.
And this was the one I had recommended to you recently, Woodinville.
Woodinville, okay. Yeah. I've got to look that up. You know, a lot of times I'll just go to the market and, you know, find out what's there. And I always like to do the reviews, because there's been some that I've tried. Somebody brought, when I was doing the COVID concerts, I always like to do that, COVID concerts. There was a guy from my old hood that brought me a $95 bottle of Willet. And, you know, after the show, I don't like to drink before a show. Yeah, and I only do it on weekends anyway. But, you know, after the show, a few of us sat around. We were all excited about this bottle. And, you know, I have like about 9 different bourbons, you know, in my garage. And so we poured, we each poured a little tumbler of bourbon, and we all tried it. And everybody's just kind of looking at each other. And finally, somebody goes, so what about that Buffalo Trace? I was like, yeah. We all poured the $90 bottle down the drain. It's like, oh my God, that's terrible. And we got, we got this other bourbon, which is like $26 or something like that. We each poured a glass, and we're like, oh, thank God. So after that, it was sort of, okay, well, I want to read the reviews on these. And that one came out really good, because anytime you go to YouTube or something, you come up with the bourbon guys, these two guys, out of the South, and they talk about what bourbons are really cool, what bourbons aren't so great. And so I'll try it a lot of the times based on that or somebody else's recommendation, you know. And you showed me that, and I saw that, you know, that one got a good recommendation, not just from you, but also from them as well. It's like, okay, cool. So we have one of those, what is that? BevMo. And
I love BevMo. I miss BevMo.
Yeah. If I can't find something at Albertsons or at Ralph's or one of the locals, you know, I'll look it up at BevMo, and it's like, oh, you know, yeah, we have it or we can get it. It's like, cool. You know, I'll either pick it up or I'll just order it that way. My daughter, you know, I forget what it was like right around my birthday in June, just as a pre-birthday present, I like this bourbon called Clyde Mays. And she found it on BevMo. She goes, you want me to order that for you? I was like, yeah, that stuff's great.
Clyde Mays, M-A-Y?
M-A-Y-S, yeah, Clyde Mays.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, it's, you know, but you can't find that at the market. Most of the, you know, you could find it at BevMo or Total Wine or a place that carries, you know, alcoholic beverages. So, yeah, but I want to get that one next.
It's not in some of the smaller liquor stores near me, mm-hmm. but some of the ones with a better selection, you'll find it there. And a lot of times it's sold out too.
Yeah.
I sometimes have to go to three or four places in town before I can find it.
Yeah, and there's this cool bottle I saw, Puncher's Chance, out of your neck of the woods, out of Portland, of all places. I haven't tried it yet, but, you know, I don't know if it's any good, but it's just, oh, wow. You know, and I looked it up and it said it was out of Portland. It's like, it's not Kentucky.
Yeah, this one's out of Washington.
Wow.
Let's see. Handmade in Washington State. It doesn't say what city or what area, but yeah, it's, you know, just Woodinville.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's about the same price as Angel's Envy, which we both enjoy. And, oh, and that was right. Kind of what made me think of this. It's a little smokier than Angel's Envy. And I like smoky.
I like smoky. That's good stuff. Yeah. I'm kind of liking this conversation already. Talking about one of my favorite subjects.
Well, okay. So next time you're in the Portland area, have you ever been to a bar called Vintage?
I haven't been anywhere up there. The reason I started going to Portland, besides to debut the show up there, there's a place out there, Sherwood Tualatin.
Yep.
It's about 14 miles outside of Portland. Cherie's brother lives there. And he has a barn, big, good-sized barn that they converted into a dance hall. They do, he's also a pastor, and they do weddings, you know, and they do it outdoor, and, you know, and the stage where he does the weddings and stuff, you could see Mount Hood right between the frame of you know, it's like backdrop of Mount Hood. It's real beautiful. I don't know if you know where that, it's a big shopping center over there. There's a Target and a Home Depot. It's on that Sherwood Tualatin Road out there.
Yeah, there's a, what's it called? Spaghetti Warehouse or something like that. Spaghetti
right over Factory. There. He's back behind the Home Depot. They've got like a large, large plot of land out there. He does like these once a month barn dances. And, you know, they do like different types of dances. He hired a Tom Petty tribute band from out here to go play up there. He's like, I couldn't get you because you guys were playing that night somewhere. It's like, oh, sorry. But that's when we started going. And then when we found out we were debuting Rough Cut up in Portland, I was like, oh, cool. Because the other guys, they flew out and they stayed in the hotel, I think, across the street from the Bossa Nova. And, you know, Phil, he goes, my brother-in-law's not staying in some little motel. He ended up pulling out his 40-foot trailer and lending it to Cherie and I. He had like a, you know, full bedroom and, you know, hot showers and stuff like that. It's like, oh, this is great. Nice. I really do kind of feel rock star. So it was nice. Now it was a nice break from the weather. Cause I remember, going up there, it was Black Friday, 2019,
yep.
We played. So we were headed up there 2 days before and we got caught in that cyclone bomb snowstorm that was supposed to be hitting right there at the California-Oregon border. And we were trying to get to, what is that, Ashland or something like that? We couldn't make it that far. We found this little place just on the California side of the border. We couldn't even make it to Weed, which is, I think, the last place you go. Dunsmuir. We found this hotel, room in Dunsmuir. And, you know, we stayed there. And the next morning, we wake up, beautiful sky, but it was like, I don't know, maybe 21 degrees outside. You know, we're all, you know, bundled up, loading up the car. And I hear noise across the street because this little hotel is kind of in a semi-residential area. And it's Thanksgiving now. And I see some guy outside in flip-flops and shorts and a t-shirt, which reminded me of you, you know, when I met you. So, I'm sitting here bundled up. I look like that kid in Christmas Story. And, you know, there's a guy outside getting his grill, you know, his slope, or what do you call that, smoker ready for his turkey. It's like, oh my God, I feel like such a sissy out here. You know, and he's looking at us, shaking his head. You know, it's like, you know, he's probably thinking tourists, you know. It was hysterical.
Yeah, and every time one of our birthdays comes up, somebody reshares those photos.
Oh, yeah. On Facebook. It was great. You know, here's me and I forget, I think Dave, because Dave had brought all half a ton of drums, and we had to load it in our car. He's, well, man, if you guys are taking the family vehicle, I want to load my drums in there. It's like, yeah, here we were thinking we were going to be comfortable. But, you know, we're loading up, and then we take pictures, and I'm looking at, you know, Brandon, he's wearing a light coat, then you're just in a t-shirt, and you know, the rest of us are in, you know, wool beanies and wool coats and stuff like that. It's like 16 degrees outside. It's like, I didn't know the sky could get this cold. That was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just kind of highlights, I mean, I used to live in Phoenix, and it was, you know, 110 degrees, but you know, dry heat doesn't hit you as bad. But still, you know, my first trip to Phoenix was, 05, 06, something like that.
Okay.
And I go down there, and it was spring or fall. And I was living in Portland at the time. I left Portland and came back at some point. But so I was living in Portland the first time around. And I go down there, and I'm teaching a class in Phoenix. And it's 108 degrees. You know, we're in a hotel. We rented a hotel conference room and we're using that. And the hotel's air conditioned, but, you know, step outside for a minute and just instantly drenched in sweat. Meanwhile, my students are wearing sweaters outside. You know, and the contrast was just.
Yeah.
But then I lived.
Sorry. It's the worst problem in the world, you know? It's like, oh my God, did you see somebody else in your. Oh man, you know, should I feel embarrassed about this?
Yeah. And then, I moved down there a couple of years later. I was there for a little bit and I moved to Boston, where my family's originally from.
Okay.
Or where I'm originally from, where I've got family. So moved to Boston for a few years and, you know, the first summer we were there and because we got there in summer, I was freezing because I was used to, you know, the Phoenix weather.
Yes, right.
So, you know, 80 degrees hit and I'm like wearing a pea coat, a naval pea coat in the summer.
Oh my God. That's funny. I, you know, I still work with a cover band, you know, it helps me keep my chops up actually, which is great. We played Saturday. There's a place that we play. It's about a 2.5 hour drive from here. It's out near Palm Springs. A place called Indio, which is right near Death Valley. And when, you know, I usually like to go on, you know, social media and say, hey, everybody, this is Steve St. James from blah, 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 you know, before we do whatever we're going to do. I stepped out there and it was 118 degrees. It was just like nuts. And Downbeat was at 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, it was 112 when we got on stage. Second set, because we only do two sets. They used to do three. Now they just do two sets. And then, you know, the tribute act comes on and they do an hour and a half. But when we got on stage for the second set, I made a joke to the audience, about 1,000 people there. And, you know, I was saying it is pretty bad when we're thrilled that it dropped to 106 degrees, you know, and I was just beat to hell by the end of that, you know, and I know that a lot of times when you go out there, you just have to be ready for it. But they stayed open, you know, they kind of followed the whole thing about making sure that the audience had to wear masks, whether it was hot or not. And people complied with it pretty well, which allowed them to stay. I think they closed during COVID. They closed that first June for about 2 weeks, May and June for about 2-3 weeks. And then they just said, well, we're going to do it this way. We're going to cut the capacity because the capacity, I think they hold about 3,000 people. It's an outdoor amphitheater style thing just outside of this casino in India. And, you know, so about 1,500 people max. You know, people mostly wore masks. They had people walking around, you know, because, you know, people want to slide them down. They'd say, hey, could you please put it back? They weren't mean about it, but, you know, most people complied. And consequently, they were able to stay open. And they stayed open from that June all the way to about halfway through December. They not only went their entire season, but they extended their season into December instead of November. But I remember that we played there in June with the Foreigner tribute, and I was wearing a wig, and I think it was 102. It's like, that's not fun, you know? And then we got asked to come back in December, and I think it was like 36 degrees when we played. It's like, I forgot the desert is funny like that. It's either it's like really hot or it's really cold. And, you know, there's almost no in between.
Yeah. So were you out there in just like a light shirt when it was 36?
I actually went out in a button-up shirt, you know, just a regular old button-up shirt. And that was it. I think, you know, yeah, I had a scarf around my neck. The band has a couple of keyboard players, and one keyboard player, he's like, hey, man, I made sure they put the sun lamp above you. It's like, thank you. You know, so they're all over there rubbing their arms between songs. And I'm like, oh, no, this is great. You know, it's like, I look up. I just can't lift the microphone stand up. I don't want to break the sun lamp. But it was, you know, it was funny because I just thought about that. You were just talking about the contrast between not being used to the cold or not being used to the heat. And, you know, in June it was terrible. And in December it was like, well, you know, with the sun lamp above me, this is pretty good. But I could tell everybody else was miserable. That was funny because, you know, you're up there for an hour and a half, you know, just trying to jump around to stay warm. And that's not the worst it's been.
Yeah, what is the worst?
I think Saturday was the worst, 118 degrees. That was crazy. That was crazy. I mean, it just, you know, I couldn't wait to get back to the hotel because when you play out there, they give you hotel rooms. So, you know, they pay you better. They give you hotel rooms, the whole thing. It's like, I just need to get in so I can get air conditioning or walk into the casino so I can get some air conditioning on me. You know, yeah, it was pretty bad.
So you're in tribute bands. Which band was this?
This was Urgent LA.
Which is what your Foreigner tribute band.
Yeah, Foreigner tribute band. It's Urgent-LA. It's funny because we just had to, I don't know if you know Kevin Rankin. I was talking to him, you know, about Jeff Buhner had, you know, mentioned, he goes, hey, you know, if you want to, we're trying to get it so that when you did Urgent LA on Google search, you know, it's urgent. So the first thing you get is urgent care, all these urgent care, you know,
you can have trauma victims showing up.
Kevin's like, no, I could, you know, here's, you know, I'm going to look into it. I could do this or I could do that, you know, but by the time, you know, I got back to Kevin, cause he was the one asking me about it. He goes, yeah. He goes, I went back to my IT instructor and talked to them and they help me. So now when you type in Urgent LA, it pops up. It's like one of the first things that pops up, which is great. So it's just.
Let's see. Yeah, number one result when I searched Urgent L.A. Urgent LA, the number one Foreigner tribute band.
That's it.
Right on. It even comes up right above the map with local urgent cares.
Urgent care. Good. It's just like, you know, can you imagine somebody needing urgent care hitting that instead? Oops, sorry.
Well, you know, somebody shows up at your house with, you know, a sucking chest wound. You can say, well, best I can do for you is sing you a song.
I did finish my EMT-1 training. And it was toward the end of the 80s. So I still remember how to do most of that, you know.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, Sheree did a volunteer first responder. So, you know, both of us actually know how to fix stuff.
Were you ever an EMT?
No. Where I was living at the time, you know, I was working with my dad. We had an insurance brokerage out in Torrance. I don't know how familiar you are with Southern California. There's a place called Torrance. And we had an insurance brokerage. When he found out that I was getting passed with a lot of flying colors, he ended up begging me not to, you know, he's just like, you know, the idea of you wearing a bulletproof vest and, you know, as an EMT, a first responder, he just freaked out about that. I loved my dad when he was around, and I enjoyed working with him. And I thought, you know what, it's okay. I volunteered in emergency rooms for a while. I would do volunteer stuff on ambulances, but I didn't pursue it. But it was interesting. I mean, it was a lot to learn. It was a lot to, a lot to process, especially when you worked in an emergency room, because, it was like any other job. You think, okay, well, it's going to start out slow, you work your way up. No, man, I was at a place out in Torrance called Little Company of Mary, and 5:30 in the morning, the first guy they bring in is an accident with a saw, just like, wow, this starts out quick, and I have this ability to kind of turn things off, where you don't really get emotional. I have that ability to be able to just kind of blank myself out and focus on the task at hand. I don't know if that's good or bad. It's just me.
Compartmentalization.
Yeah. I think that was something that my dad taught me, because I used to have a really crappy temper, and he just one day is laughing at me at the office. It's like, why are you laughing? It's like, you're going to die early if you don't control your, control your emotions. He goes, you just go like, 0 to 80, like in a second. He goes, you got to just kind of learn how to relax a little bit. And, he taught me a lot about, thinking before you speak, just considering what you're going to say. Don't say things in a rush or in anger. You really kind of want to pace yourself in any situation so that you can speak clearly and make sure that you're concise about what it is you actually do want to say. That's, I think, a lot of times how people say stupid things or hurt each other's feelings or get mad at each other, is because they just blurt out the first thing that comes to mind without really thinking about what they want to say.
Yep. Yeah. Taking a beat and thinking about it, calming down. That's good advice. Yeah.
And, I just got to the point where I was able to focus on, okay, well, let me consider what I want to say before I say it. So that way I say the right thing the first time. I don't have to go back and, oh, what I meant was this or that. So. Also, I think some of that comes with age.
Yeah.
I hope.
You can be an emotional 20-something-year-old, but eventually you start to, calm down, things get put in a little more perspective.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You realize it's bad in this moment, but there is a tomorrow.
Right. Right.
And so you have to deal with tomorrow. What you do today, you have to deal with tomorrow. So taking a moment, thinking about it, not being internet culture.
Mm-hmm. We tried to convey that to our two kids. They're both adults and they're doing well, and we're real happy about that. So, it was helpful lessons to just pass on.
Yeah. So, let me ask you, so we mentioned Rough Cut.
Mm-hmm.
So for anybody who doesn't know, you're the lead singer of Rough Cut. And you're not really, now we talked about, so you and I met when the current lineup of Rough Cut debuted a little more than 18 months ago, I think. So like you were saying, Black Friday 2019.
Correct.
But you weren't new to Rough Cut at that time. I mean, you've had a relationship with the band and various members of the band for quite some time.
Right.
Tell us about that.
I met Chris when he was in Rat. I was in just a cover band called Sexist. We used to play at Gazzari's on the Strip, and there were, I think, 4 or 5 or 6 stages, something like that. There were a couple of downstairs stages, a couple of upstairs stages. So there were always, this band's playing. And I remember really liking them. Great band, and I liked the way they dressed, because for me, clothing was kind of a big deal. Seeing Kiss or whatever in the late 70s, that was a lot of fun. And he'd always kind of hang around and watch us. So there was a liquor store right across the street from Gazzari's, Gil Turner Liquor. And we always used to say hi to each other over there, you know, because you'd buy, you know, soft drink, or if you were old enough, buy a drink or whatever. And we would, you know, we kind of became each other's fan clubs. And, you know, eventually the thing came up where it's, hey, you know, hey, maybe we should start a band together. I think that he wanted to kind of ease himself out of Brat. You know, it's not nothing bad, but I think he wanted to go a different direction than Steve Piercy was going. So we ended up creating a plan to start a band. And we wanted to think of something like a Kiss or something where there was not just a musical aspect of it, but there was a visual aspect of it too. And okay. Ultimately we came up with Sarge, and we wrote a bunch of really good songs. You know, we thought, and we took that first 6-7 months just playing keggers and stuff like that out in the Valley in Los Angeles area, till we kind of had a following. And we were playing whatever was popular at the time, it was Scorpions or Judas Priest, and we would throw in our songs too. But we would never say, this is one of our songs, because there's always that expectancy when you say, well, this is an original, because you get that attitude, oh, well, show me. So we would just play the song. Said, don't tell people we're playing an original song, let's just play it. So when we started hearing people sing lyrics to songs that were ours, we're thinking, I think we're ready. So, you know, we talked to people at the Troubadour or wherever, and we started getting opening dates on Tuesday or Wednesday nights, because they would work you from slot to slot. We started drawing people, which was good. We had a bass player at the time, but over time we needed somebody a little bit better, and we went back to Rat and basically recruited Matt Foran. You know, he came along, and you know, things started going really well. And then we said, well, we need a good drummer. When we recruited a guy named Bobby Marks, well, Bobby Eisenberg, Bobby Marks, who was also in Rat. And I think by this time, Dave joined Rat. Dave Alford joined Rat. And he said, Piercy, who we all knew, we were all friends with each other. I think Steve Piercy's like, you know, is Steve just going to take everybody from the band? Maybe, I don't know. But I think everybody that we initially had, it was Chris, Matt, and then Bobby, they were all in Rat. And that was the crew that I saw when I met Rat, eventually became Sarge. And then, you know, we parted ways with Bobby, and we got another drummer, Kurt Meyer, who I think when I left for Motown, he ended up in Salty Dog, which I think they recorded. Okay. Yeah. So Kurt Meyer, you know, he was in a band called Max Havoc and Salty Dog. But he became the final drummer for Rough Cut. So we had started recording, we had recorded just a self-recorded demo, which was a song called Looking for Love. And then another song called Take You Down, which I'll get to that in a bit, but you know, that was kind of a sing along, you know, more pop hard rock song. And then we had a producer come along and say, I really want to work with you guys. And this is a guy that had produced, you know, he had engineered and also produced Kansas. There was a show out here called King Biscuit Flower Hour. I think he was a producer on that. It was always a live Sunday night thing. You know, it'd be different artists like the Cars live or this band live or that band live. And we started hearing some of his work, and we were floored by that, you know, he wanted to work with us. So we had a series of three songs that were originals. And then we did one cover. The cover was Paul Revere and the Raiders, a song called Hungry. And then we had Sound the Battle Cry, which I had nothing to do with. Then we had Out in the Jungle, which Chris, myself, and Matt wrote. And then we had a song called Prowler, which also, I think Matt came up with the bass line, Chris did the guitar, and I did the lyrics and melody on that, which became, I think that's on something with the other guys, you know, Rough Cut.
Yeah.
The other original guys. But we had a good run. I mean, we started headlining clubs in a rather short time. We started drawing really good crowds. bunch of starving guys, you know, living, I think five guys living in an apartment. It was the four band members. And then we had the guy that did most of our road crew type of stuff. And that got kind of a little, you know, hectic at times. You know, I was arguing who's going to get the bedroom this weekend. I got a call from a guy that played guitar in a band that opened for us, Howie Rice. And he said, "Do you like Motown?" And I was like, "Dude, I was born in Bronx. I grew up in Carson. Of course I like Motown." You know, because both of those areas, that's a lot of the music you would hear in those neighborhoods. And he says, "I have some people up here at Motown that really want to meet you on Monday." I was like, "Okay." And yeah, I found out where Motown was. It was on Sunset and Fine. I don't know if you remember First Interstate Bank. There was a
vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big First Interstate Bank building, but they had, I think, the top five or six floors. And I literally walked in and the two producer / manager said, "You know, we want you. You're perfect for the part." I was like, I hadn't even sang a note yet, but this guy obviously told them, you know, that, you know, I'd fit the bill. The way Chris had put it in an earlier interview was that they had put me on retainer. It wasn't exactly like that, but they ended up, you know, basically presenting me with, you know, paperwork and, oh, you know, and it was over a short time, but once I signed the paperwork, they said, "You got to leave your other band." So I let Chris and Matt. So
they didn't tell you that in advance.
No. So I had to leave. So what happened was they had a show coming, you know, within, I think, a 3 or 4 week period. Everybody's kind of like pissed at the time, you know, but they ended up hiring another singer and they had one show that they were going to do just to debut this new guy. So I actually went to the show. I knew they were mad at me, but I still wanted to support them. You know, I'd been in a band with these guys for about 2.5-3 years. And I ended up sitting, you know, because they had tables in there as well. I sat and I was watching the show and I get a tap on the shoulder. It's like, "Hey, do you mind moving over a little?" I said, "Sure, no problem." And so I scooch over a little bit. "Thank you." And I turn around, "No problem. It's Ronnie James Dio." And it's like, "Wow, hey," you know, and we struck up a conversation. Very nice guy. And I was like, "What brings you here?" And he says, "Well, I have this band that I'm working with and the drummer, Dave Alford." I go, "I know Dave," you know, and he goes, "Yeah, he recommended I come and see these guys." And he says, you know, and I explained, "Yeah, I just left the band. So they're debuting the new singer." And he goes, "So you're not," he goes, "you were in this band." I go, "Yeah, I left just a few weeks ago. I got a contract with Motown." And so he kind of like, "Oh," you know, and I don't know if he was expecting to see me singing, but, you know, he got Rob, you know, the guy that they got, and he ended up picking up Matt and Chris, or I guess maybe he was the one that introduced Matt and Chris, you know, to the rest of the band. I, you know, and that was my early connection. I met Paul later and we would see each other on the Sunset Strip. Something I had told somebody that was interviewing me a few months ago when this whole Rough Cut versus Rough Cut thing came up, and he's, you know, he says, "Do you know Paul?" And I told him, I said, "I've only ever met him a few times. He was always a real gentleman to me. He was very nice. You know, I liked his voice," because I would, you know, around the time they had broken out, I was used to hearing voices that, you know, like guys from Motley Crue or Poison or Warrant. And I noticed Paul's voice almost immediately to me was very, very different. You know, he had just kind of a stronger, bluesier voice, not kind of that head tone that a lot of guys sang with. He had just this very out front voice. But, I told him, I said, you know, when I met the guy, he was always very nice. So I would see him from time to time on the strip, say hi, you know, we'd shake hands, whatever. Chris and I kind of remained friends. I think Matt got a little ticked at me, you know, because we thought we were going to make it. You know, so many bands at that time were taken off. But, you know, my connection with Chris, I think around the time I got out of music that first time, the music biz, was around 1987. And I worked with a bunch of interesting people by that point. When I was at Motown, the management, they basically let go of the guy that brought me in the first place. Howie, who went on to win a Grammy. He produced the Pointer Sisters for Beverly Hills Cop, for the soundtrack.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he produced
Menudo. Neutron Dance.
Yeah, Neutron Dance. Thank you. He produced that, and then he produced Menudo when I think it was Little Ricky Martin before he became Ricky Martin, and I think Bobby Rosa was in the band at the time. I think that was like one of their most popular lineups. He produced those guys, so he did okay for himself. But they asked me to find a guitar player, and I was basically going up and down the strip looking for people, and you know, everybody I knew, it's just like, hey, you interested? No, well, I think we're getting, you know, because everybody's getting signed. I ended up finding Mark Turin of the Bullet Boys, who was a guitar player mostly. I mean, he sang, he was a great singer, but, you know, I knew him for playing guitar, and he's, yeah, I'll do it. So I talked to my guys, and I said, I think I found somebody that is very, very interested in doing this. So we brought Mark Turin in. I know this is the long version of this. But
it's okay.
But he ended up, you know, becoming the guitar player for the band that I was with at Motown. Chris and I reconnected sometime, early 2000s. And at the time, I think he had an IT business out in San Diego. He was just swearing off music. I don't want to have anything to do with music anymore. But I was playing in San Diego three times a week in a cover band. I had started singing again. So he would come out and see me once in a while. He goes, oh, it's kind of cool seeing you again. And then we lost touch again. Eventually I think he sold his business. He sold his house and moved up into Long Beach or something like that. And then he started going out on the road with Piercy again when it was the Rad Experience. I think that's what Piercy was calling it. So he did that for a few years, and then it was about 2018, you know, we would talk off and on, and he called me and he's, hey, I live in North Hollywood. Well, you know, Toluca Lake, which is North Hollywood area. He goes, would you want to write songs together? And we wrote good songs together. We were always able to, you know, connect on songs. So, you know, sure. You know, I'd love to. So I went up and we started writing songs. So that's when he started telling me about Rough Riot, which was, didn't last very long. It was him and Paul and Dave from Rough Cut working with Carlos Gavazzo and Sean McNabb from Quiet Riot, or, you know, a version of Quiet Riot. And, I remember going to support those guys. I was really excited, you know, and then, you know, ultimately Chris said, I'd like to put a band together with you. And it wasn't initially like we were saying, hey, let's do Rough Cut. It was just going to be, we were going to have a band together. So, you know, I was hoping that the Rough Riot thing would do well, because I figured, well, that, you know, it's hard enough trying to get out and do original music. So if things work out with Rough Riot, that's just going to make it that much easier, because, you know, that puts Chris's name back, you know, into prominence, you know, as far as marquee value or whatever. And it didn't, you know, the whole thing, I think it fell apart almost as quick as it began. And I don't know if there was, you know, just disagreements or whatever happened. All I know is he called me one day, he says, yeah, we pulled the plug. And I was like, you know, sorry to hear that. And I really was, you know, because I thought it was, to me personally, I thought it was a good idea. And I thought you get the best of both worlds. You get Quiet Riot music, you get Rough Cut music, but it just, you know, it didn't pan out. So still, we just kept writing songs. It's like, okay, well, now we're, you know, now we're going for ourselves. We're going to write, you know, we're just going to write all these songs. And I was doing a cover band on a Saturday night. And I remember this was hysterical in Huntington Beach. And I'm loading my equipment on the stage and I turn around.
Wait a minute. Okay. So a singer helps with load in?
Yeah. Can you believe that? That's why I quit doing bars, is because I got tired of, you know, Cherie's like, I can't wait till you don't have to do PA systems anymore, you know, but I'm loading equipment, you know, it was my equipment I was loading in. And I turn around and there's Dave Alford. Now I was like, what the hell are you doing here? He said, hey man, I came to see you. He goes, I wanted to check on my investment. I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, if you're going to be in Rough Cut, I was like, I'm going to be in rough cut. What are we talking about? So at the point,
nobody told you you were hired.
Right. Nobody told me I was hired. It was just, he came to see me. I thought it was odd because, you know, this was near downtown Huntington Beach, which is about a 2-hour drive from where he lives in Porter Ranch. That's out by Palmdale Air Force Base. That's out in the desert somewhere. But he drove all the way down to sit and listen to about two sets of us, you know, just doing cover tunes. And, you know, he came up, give me a hug. He goes, I got to go. I got a long drive back. I was like, not a problem. You know, man, I love you. Let's talk this week. Sure. And, you know, Sheree was laughing. She's going, guess who my new best friend is? I was like, oh, because he sat with her the whole time. And, you know, Dave likes to talk. I'm singing and I could see them over there, blah, 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 you know, just the whole couple of hours. It was just really funny. So, you know, I talked to them and, you know, went up there and we just started discussing it and talked about trademarking and the whole thing. And I know that they did reach out. Yeah, I know that they had tried to call these guys a couple of times or more than a couple of times.
Just for clarity, for the people watching.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Chris Hager and Dave Alford reached out to Paul Shortino, Matt Thor,
and Matt and
Amir.
Amir. Yeah.
Amir Durai.
I don't know exactly how many times each one, but I know that they did, you know, whether it was email or phone calls. And I know that Paul would call Chris sometimes while we were in the middle of recording songs. Hey, I need to pick this up or I need to pick that up. So, this is just stuff that I heard transpire while I was at Chris's place up in North Hollywood. And, kind of coming out of left field saying, well, it was a complete shock or a surprise. It's like, well, that might not be exactly accurate, guys.
Well, I think for the most part, I think that album drop was just out of nowhere. But I know that, say again?
It's interesting because I haven't listened to all of it. I've heard Bed of Black Roses, but there's a song on there called Electric, and we were recording Electric as well. And I'm trying to think what the other one was. Dive, a song called Dive, I think. And we have a version called Between Lines. And I heard those songs the way that they were recorded when they released them. I heard them as, you know, as a demo. And, you know, the thing was always, hey, Steve, can you rewrite these? Can you rewrite these? Can you rewrite these? And, you know, it's just like, okay, you know, is there going to be a problem? Is there going to be any clash? It's like, no, we'll make sure that we, you know, we credit, you know, when we released Black Rose, our version. If you look at the YouTube or the Facebook links, Matt was credited, you know, every single time. We made sure of that. So, that they released it. I don't know what prompted them to do that. I don't know, you know, where that came from. I mean, you know, look, you know, they were in Rough Cut as much as Chris and Dave were in Rough Cut. And, you know, I would guess that they have every right to do that as well.
Prior to this year, there have been 4 Rough Cut albums.
Mm-hmm.
One is a compilation, and then one's a live album. And then there was Rough Cut, the debut album, and then Rough Cut Wants You, their second album. And then the live was simply Rough Cut Live. And that was all 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they are the classic Rough Cut lineup, but then you have the whole Rough Riot thing going on, and Paul was still with Rough Riot when Dave and Chris left, and when they brought in you and Jeff Buhner and Darren Householder. Like I said to Chris and Dave, when I talked to them the day after this all happened, or the day after the new Rough Cut 3 album dropped, none of you was quiet about going out as Rough Cut. You know, there was a lot of publicity about that first show.
Right.
If 2020 hadn't happened the way it did with the pandemic and everything, I imagine you'd have been out doing shows. You'd have been maybe putting out some new music. I know you've been working on it. But just out of nowhere, you know, a year and a half after you guys debut, there's suddenly a new album and a press release. I'm just going to be direct. A really poorly worded press release saying, you know, basically these three guys, Shortino, Thorne, and Duroc, aka Davidson, are Rough Cut, and the main three guys in Rough Cut, and anybody calling themselves Rough Cut without them is lying to you. And they actually use that phrase. It's like, well, this is a really strange way to just announce, you know, and then to put on that.
Say again? I didn't see it. That's just, you know, now I'm kind of like, oh God, see if I can find that. You know, because the other guys, I don't know if they look. I mean, because, you know, I say, well, you know, I saw this or I saw that. And they're like, I haven't even seen it. So, you know, I'm always interested. But we'll get there later. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, no, it's the liner notes and press release.
Okay. All right.
So another mutual friend of ours, Ruben Mosqueda. I couldn't remember his last name for a second. Yeah. So Ruben got a physical copy, ordered a physical copy of Rough Cut 3 and did a full review of it. And I had, they had already sent me a digital copy, you know, by the time he got his physical, and I didn't write a review. I'm not a reviewer much, but Ruben's review agrees with mine. A couple of the tracks are just demos. That's what they are. Mm-hmm. Some of them are really well produced, or some of the tracks are really well produced. Some of them are strictly demos. You know, it's not what I would have expected to see on a released record. Mm-hmm. You know, but I have always liked Paul Shortino's voice in just about everything I've ever heard him in, not just Rough Cut.
Right. He's been in a few different things.
Yeah. I've always liked Matt Thorne's work. I've been aware of Amir's work and I liked him with Rough Cut, but I never really followed him. So I can't say whether I really like his playing or not, but I like everybody's writing and I like them in Rough Cut. I just thought this was a strange way to do it, you know, and I don't know what happened behind closed doors. I don't know if there was ever any outreach from them to Chris and Dave. I just thought it was a very strange way to release this. And I'm not alone in that thought. Just out of nowhere, here's an album. No, we're Rough Cut. The other guys are lying. You know, it was just a very strange way to put it.
It was interesting. I was at work, day job work. You know, I'm smart enough to keep a day job. And a friend of mine messaged me from Tucson. Just, you know, text message. He goes, hey, homie, because he calls me homie. And he goes, Paul Shortino's doing an interview on YouTube. And, you know, he mentioned Rough Cut. And, you know, he's speaking nicely of you. And it's interesting because he does. I mean, you know, I had interviewed with Ron Keel. I don't know if you know Ron Keel.
I know of him. And we're, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, Ron and Paul are real good friends, and I got along with Paul really well on the Sunset Strip back in the day. You know, we did a few shows together when he was in Steeler and stuff, but you know, he says, you know, this is kind of awkward for me because, you know, Paul's one of my very best friends. So I was like, you know, it's no problem. You know, and so he asked me, what do you think? And I think I just told him the same thing I told you. It was like, he was always a gentleman to me. I have nothing bad to say about that guy. You know, I thought he was a great vocalist. He is a great vocalist. And you know, he says, did you reach out to him? And I said, well, I did on Facebook, but it had nothing to do with music. You know, I have a dog and I love my dog. And I noticed that, you know, he had a few dogs and one of the dogs had died. And I just messaged him to say, you know, hey, you know, I'm really sorry. I could tell how much he loved your dog. And, you know, having a dog, I just wanted to let you know, I'm so very sorry. It's a beautiful, you know, beautiful dog. And that was it, you know? So, you know, and I know that when Paul spoke about me in that interview and in the one that he did to announce the Rough Cut 3, everything was cool with me. I don't think they had a problem with me personally at all, but I think that this whole thing is with him and Matt and Chris and Dave, I don't know how much involvement Amir has in it, because I think Amir's, you know, he's still got, what is it, Julian K or one of these other bands that he does.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing pretty well. So I don't know. I'm just speculating. But I'm wondering, you know, well, how much of this is driven by, you know, the entire three of them, or, you know, if it's just Matt or if it's Paul and Matt or whatever. It's, you know, it happened so sudden that, you know, for a while. And I think, you know, we messaged each other back and forth, you and I, where I was just, you know, I'm going to hang off the phone for a while, because I don't, you know, I love my social media. I love, you know, looking up things on Google. I like looking for history. And when the first thing I see is Blabbermouth or this or that, at first it's Rough Cut versus Rough Cut. And I was like, oh, yep. You know, I don't need this, you know. And for a while I was talking to you about my frustrations, and, you know, it was just, after a while, I came to a realization, you know, my daughter, you know, little side note here, my daughter, she is a ship captain, and, you know, 100 ton plus vessels. And, you know, that job is, you know, while it's kind of a cool job, you know, when you're at sea, anything can happen.
Yeah.
You know, it can be pretty burly. And she had a tough first week. And this is right around the time of my birthday, which is mid-June. And she took me to Knott's Berry Farm. And I was looking at my phone. I was like, oh, my God, here's another one of these stupid articles. And she was looking at her phone, and, you know, about her rough first week as a captain. You know, she'd had her captain's license for a couple of years, but she started what they call second op training, where she's driving this ship and there's a senior captain above her, you know, monitoring what she does. So she says, you know what, why don't we just turn off our phones? You know, why don't we just turn off our phones, stick them in our pocket. We're at Knott's Berry Farm. Let's enjoy the roller coasters. Let's have a beer together. And I realized how much more cool that was when we did that. We got on roller coasters. You know, it's like at my age, I'm thinking I'm going to die on one of these things. And, you know, but at least I'm going to die having fun. And, you know, it was cool. Just sit with my daughter, having a couple of beers and being on roller coasters and stuff. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to leave that. You know, I'm going to let that go. You know, that will sort itself out however it sorts itself out. And I'm okay with that. You know, I made jokes with the guys. I was just, you know, cause well, they got to change your name or, you know, and you've seen this before, you know, you've seen this before with all kinds of bands, you know, this band versus, you know, this version versus this version. And I started making jokes because we have a conference call once a week, sometimes more than once a week. And then we do these little conference text messages. You know, and the memes are flying back and forth and the little jokes like that. And I said, well, you know, it's Chris and Dave, you know, we could call it, you know, a Rough Cut CD, you know, someone released it's a Rough Cut CD, you know. And then I said, we could get really edgy if we want, you know, we could, if we really want to piss people off, let's, you know, we instead of Chris and Dave, we call it Dave and Chris, we could call the band RCDC. Yeah. Just, you know, get really edgy and piss, you know, go big or go home, right? So, you know, at this point, look, we've got shows coming up. I don't know what they're going to work out. Not my business. We'll figure out how we're going to do the name thing, whatever. But, you know, after 2.5 years of trying to contact them, doing a show in Portland that ended up, you know, on, I think, one of the things about Rough Cut setting history with a new lineup. And yep. That was with me and Jeff and Darren, as well as Chris and Dave, saying that it was a deception, sort of like, well, again, that's not exactly accurate. I mean, it's not like we've been quiet about this. We, you know, we kept a couple of the Facebook pages. We post stuff. I post stuff on my social media all the time, you know, about Rough Cut. And I'm sure the other guys do too. So it's not like it was that quiet.
No. And you put out, you shot that whole new video for Black Rose starring Priya Panda, which people, if you have not seen this video, I don't care if you're Paul Shortino's biggest fan and you never want to have anything to do with Rough Cut that isn't Paul Shortino, go watch this video, Black Rose, Rough Cut. You're going to feel every word that Steven sings. and Priya Panda is going to act it all out. Yeah, I mean, you're going to feel this song. Go watch this video. But yeah, so, you know, the debut show, I interviewed Chris and Dave before the show. It was a very short interview because somebody else was doing sound check and having disagreements with the sound guy for the venue. You know, so I interviewed Chris and Dave before the show, and then I interviewed everybody after the show again. And then Sleaze Rocks was there. Ruben came and interviewed. And then KNAC.
Krista?
Krista with, yeah.
She did an interview while I was freezing my ass loading the gear. You know, they were all inside the nice room, you know.
Yeah.
Doing the interview.
For that alone, you deserve a Grammy.
Thank you. That's funny.
But yeah, it wasn't quiet. I mean, I was there, I aired the interview, you know, it got quoted in, I don't know, a bunch of websites always quote my interviews. KNAC did the video interview. You know, ours was just audio. Then Sleaze Rocks, Ruben wrote up an interview and a review of the show. I mean, you would have to be outside the music business to not know that there was that Rough Cut was back with a new lineup and had played. So I don't know. I mean, someone suggested maybe it was less the three of them and more somebody's spouse. You know, maybe just one person kind of driving it forward. Who knows?
I don't know Paul well enough. I could, you know, again, I wouldn't speak ill of him at all. Especially, you know, being the fact that there seems to be no, you know, nothing between him and I that is, you know, bad, you know, other than I think we had kind of kind of a mutual respect for each other. I know that, you know, I think it was somebody told me, oh, you know, Matt said he wrote that song. And I know that he does write. I know that if he had written the entire song, there was no reason that we should have had that same demo that they released. You know, there's that. Just perspective. When they released Wants You, it was a second album. I rushed out to get it at a record store because I supported them. You know, I mean, I had a couple bros in that band. There was Chris and there was Matt. And I got to a song and Chris announced this on stage in Portland I think Dave got out from behind the drums to say something. We were doing our last song, which was You Want to Be a Star. And that was that song was called Take You Down. And when I heard it, I got ticked off because it's like, well, wait a second. I should have gotten my name in the song at least because, you know, Matt wasn't even in the band, Sarge, when I wrote Take You Down, which ultimately became You Wanna Be a Star, which ultimately ended up on the TV show. You know, and Chris and I went back and forth about it. And later on, he apologized about it. He goes, you know, we kind of hosed you on that. You know, you should have got credit. And it's like, well, you know, I appreciate that. And, you know, over time, you just let it go. You just let it go because it's like, you know, I don't think anybody got rich off of it anyway. And then Prowler came out and, you know, here's the thing. If you want to refute it, you shouldn't have released a DVD or a CD called Sarge about 2 or 3 years before you released Rough Cut 3 on the same record label, that DDR, which Demon Doll Records DDR, because that's also available there. And it's pretty evident Prowler was a Sarge song before it was ever a Rough Cut song. And Take You Down, if you listen to it, it's pretty easy to tell it's You Want to Be a Star. So, you know, did I raise hell about that? No. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, things like that happen. But here's the difference is that Matt did get credit on Black Rose, you know. But, you know, I guess he went full on scorched earth from what I heard about the ASCAP, you know, songwriting credits when they released the Rough Cut 3 thing. So it's like, okay, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. When we were talking about this, when it first broke, one of the things, having been an actual journalist, I went and I looked up the legalities of some of this stuff. I researched the BMI and ASCAP songwriting credits and the trademark applications. I don't remember what the credit was on that. Can look it up right now. I'm sorry, were we talking about Prowler?
Not Prowler. We were talking about, I think it would have been the three songs that we had both recorded, which would have been Black Rose, in their case, Bed of Black Roses. The other one's called Electric. And
Okay.
we kept that same song title. But the other one for them is called, I think it's called Dive. And
Yes. Track one on Rough Cut three.
ours is called Between the Lines.
Why am I not seeing anything on ASCAP? Oh, here we go. Okay. Bed of Black Roses. Writers. Carlos Cavazo, Amir Davidson, Chris Hager, Paul Shortino, and Matt Thorne.
Okay.
Let's see if Dive's listed. Dive is listed. Same lineup. It's just the classic lineup of Rough Cut, the five of them.
Okay. So they did give him credit.
Yeah. So, and in fact, Dave's listed first on Dive.
Okay.
Then Amir, Chris, Paul, and Matt. And then Electric. So Carlos Cavazo is listed first. Chris is listed, but Dave's not. Then you have Amir, Paul, and Matt on Electric.
I'm guessing they probably know this already.
I would think. I mean, it's public information, so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope it doesn't turn into something nastier than it already is, but realistically, it's going to, and there's going to be a fight about it.
I hope not, but it has quieted down, I've noticed. A lot. Yeah, I just haven't seen that much about it lately. We got a couple of shows coming up, and I guess we'll see what happens. We had sent in for a trademark a while ago, and then I think they did the same thing. So I don't know how that's going to go. Again, no idea.
Yeah. Well, whatever, even if you guys have to change your name, I really like the way the five of you sound together.
Oh,
And sorry if that was a total non sequitur, but
okay.
I like the way you guys sound together. I like the way you sing the old songs. And I said this to Chris and Dave when I talked to them shortly after. There isn't a comparison between you and Paul. Anybody who makes a comparison is trying to create conflict.
It's
You
just
know,
two different types of voices.
exactly. And you both sing, Black Widow or Cut Your Heart Out. I love the way Paul sings it. I've heard you sing it live. I love the way you sing it. This is not you trying to be Paul Shortino or trying to replace him, in the sense of you could do it better. No, it's just two different singers taking on the same material. And then the way you did Black Rose and the lyrics you changed and the melodies, I love that song. I love how it came out. I do like their version of Bed of Black Roses. And I'm not going to say which one I like better. That's just not the point. I just like both of them as two separate pieces.
You could look at it this way. The fans, whoever likes either or both bands, gets two cool versions of the same song. So yeah. I don't see a loser for them, really. You know, you're going to get gatekeepers. And I've seen that, you know, a lot, you know, on social media where it's like, oh, you know this guy. Know. And that's not just us. That's everybody. Somebody says, know this person, know band. It's like, guess what? We're out there. They're out there. There's a band, you know, you can say whatever you want, but there's a band and people are going to go see the band and they're going to choose to like them or choose not to. That's their choice. You know, you know, saying that if this person's not in the band, it's not a band. Again, it's not accurate. That's not true. You can say it. That's just your opinion. And thank you so much for it. You know, along with all the other bazillion opinions that fly around out there. That's just life. You got to put on your big boy pants and deal with that.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes you just can't have the same people playing together decade after decade after decade.
You know, people don't get along. You know, I worked with a bunch of different people and we butted heads and we managed, you know, I mean, between the time I was in Sarge and then when I, or not, you know, Sarge and, you know, I left Sarge for Motown and I got to deal with Motown. I, you know, I worked with some, you know, great musicians. Obviously I told you Mark Tureen was in that band. The drummer was in a couple of 70s disco type bands. I'm trying to remember Shalimar. He played drums for Shalimar and I forget who else, Gerald Thompson, Jerry Blaze. And Cliff Lyles was in a band called Apollo. And I remember seeing them on a daytime talk show. Had no idea who they were. And the singer ended up being our manager, who I think he's like a pretty big name now. I think he, you know, a couple of his clients were J-Lo and Mariah Carey. And he and I are about the same age. His name's Benny Medina. He was our manager. And one of the other managers, the two of them was Carrie Gordy Ashby. You know, and Carrie had the last name, Gordy, especially from Motown. You know, he was family. So, you know, we got to work with a lot of neat people on that album. And, you know, we didn't always get along. We butted heads and stuff like that. Sometimes just outright screaming at each other. But somehow you find a way to calm all that down. And, okay, let's move on from this. And, you know, so, you know, on the other hand, some people just, like you said, they don't work. You know, I mean, you know, putting them in the same room is like putting two betta fish in the same tank. You know, eventually the water's just going to be red. You know, there's not going to be any fish left anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that person. Or at least I hope I'm not that person. And I hope that, you know, I hope that eventually the five of them or whoever the offended or offending parties are work things out. And, you know, things turn out okay.
I hope so too. I hope so too, because they're all great musicians. And I'd like to see them all succeed.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Unfortunately, apparently, and this wasn't officially said to me, but it was said to me by an intermediary. Unofficially, Paul Schrettino won't talk to me because I gave a forum to Dave and Chris first.
Oh.
Which when the press release and the album dropped, I immediately sent an interview request to Paul and to Chris. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Chris responded first and said a time for, you know, and then he brought along Dave, which was great. But Paul would not talk to me. So I can't get that side of it directly. And, you know, There have been other interviews with Paul, but there were a few questions missing from those interviews that I would have asked.
Okay.
So, oh, well, either way, I hope it just all works out.
Yeah. Same here. So. I know. You know, let's just keep it, you know, people are wanting live music, you know, let's give it to them. You know, I'm trying to always keep working, you know, I like singing.
Yeah. And so one more point on all that, and then then I'll drop it. So M3 happened recently. Mm-hmm. And one of the bands in M3 was Steve Riley's LA Guns.
Right.
And they had a packed house, which proves in my mind, just one of many reasons to believe this. it doesn't matter what you call the band. If people like the music, they're going to show up.
Right.
It was a very public, very, you know, nasty kind of battle about the LA Guns name.
Right.
And
we just talked about that earlier, you know?
Yeah. And Steve Riley's group had to change their name. And, you know, so they were on the bill, and I saw the M3 posters, Steve Riley's LA Guns. That was right. Not just LA Guns. And they played to a packed house.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody has to change a name, people will still come for good music.
Right. I already gave you my ideas.
Yeah.
You know, but who listens to me, right?
Well, you know, it'd be really funny if that's, what was it, RCDC?
RCDC. Yeah, that'd be great. You know, or a Rough Cut CD. You know, either or. I think that would be funny.
Somebody online, I think it was a comment to one of the, it was like the blabbermouth pickup of my interview or something. Somebody said, just call your band Rougher Cut and blow them away.
Yeah, there you go. Rougher than you. That'd be good.
Well, it's like, what was that alt pop band in the 90s? Better Than Ezra.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody was like, well, who the hell's
Ezra?
Ezra,
right.
So,
you know, you can go on that forever too. It's just, you know, because I mean, for me, when I, you know, like I said, when I first heard it, I was like frazzled. I'm like, you know what? You know, and again, it was, you know, my daughter, just dad, put the phone down for a while. It's like, yeah, sounds good. After that, I just was able to kind of like, okay, you know what? This is all kind of funny. You know, I'm just, you know, gonna keep my head above water, keep swimming, and, you know, make sure I do, you know, a lot of things that keep me busy and not having to think about that. Cause right now I don't, you know, I it's not forefront in my life. I enjoy working with the guys. I enjoy writing songs with the guys. We're still going to record, and you know, whether we keep the name or they get the name or whatever, it's not like people aren't going to know that we're out there, you know, because it's, you know, whether it's, like I said, Chris and Dave's Rough Cut, who cares? You know, whether it's Paul Sortino and Matt and Amir's Rough Cut, who cares? Let's just give the folks music. That's what I care about. You know, but, you know, they'll sort that out, and, you know, hopefully, you know, everybody lands on their feet. I think we will. I think they will too. Everybody's talented, you know, I mean, everybody's very, very talented people. And, you know, that really kind of sets a standard for people to want to listen to you.
Yes. Yeah. So, switching tacks.
Sure.
I've spoken to a lot of musicians who regret not practicing their playing or singing during the quarantine. And I've talked to others who found creative ways to keep their playing in shape. I know you're in the latter group. So tell us, what did you do during the 2020-2021 lockdown?
Oh, okay. This is a cheat for you because you kind of know. But yes. But for, you know, when this thing started, where it was just like, even my day job called and said, you know, you guys are going to work for the next 2 weeks just to try and get as much stuff in shape as possible. And then 2 weeks turned into 1 week, and they said, okay, go home. I think, you know, cause we, you know, we were, you know, we're kind of expensive, you know, we drive company vehicles and we have to constantly order parts, you know, to fix machines, and they're not getting any income while this is happening. So it's like, okay, go home. We're going to put you guys on furlough so you could get your benefits. They set up everything for us. They paid our benefits 100% for the 14 months I was out of a day job, which.
Wow. That's a great company.
Yeah. Well, you have them up there too, LA Fitness. So,
yeah, I call it La Fitness because they don't have periods.
Yeah, there you go. La Fitness. but what happened was, you know, Sheree and I belong to a bowling league out here. And, you know, a lot of the people in the bowling league would go to see me local if I was just singing at a local bar or something. And they said, hey, would you sing us a couple of songs? So I didn't put it on the bowling league page. I just put it on my personal page. It's like, you know, hey guys, this is for you. And I sang a couple of songs and I think I messed one of them up. I forgot the second verse. And you can hear my wife laughing in the background, whispering the lyrics to me. And I'm sitting there trying to play my little acoustic guitar, laughing while I'm singing. You know, I was like, nobody's ever going to want to hear this again. And people started, you know, messaging me or just posting on that thing. Hey, thank you for doing this. Could you do it again? So I waited a few days and then I sang about four songs. And then I created it as an event. I did Friday night at 9 o'clock, but then people on the East Coast were saying, hey, if you're going to do this, could you do it a little earlier? I said, I'm not going to do 7 o'clock. I'm going to do 8 o'clock. And eventually I turned it into an actual show. You know, I pick out a format of songs for that week. And I try to put about an hour's worth of music together. I bought the backdrops. I dress like I dress on stage. You know, I set up my PA and I'd invite a few friends over and they would sit on one side of the room and I would stay on this side of the room. And again, I would treat it like a show, but I would do about an hour's worth of music. And somebody said, why don't you set up a virtual tip jar? So I'd always put the tip jars at the top. And that was like, you know, I was getting good tips. It was like, this is kind of cool. But 1 week would be 80s hair metal. Another week would be Soul Train night. This night is just Motown. But it was great for me. And then I was getting a lot of people that were either just on regular social media or private messaging me saying, hey, listen, thank you for what you're doing. You know, there's literally nothing to do. So thank you for doing this. I had an Air Force pilot message me, could you please do a shout out to, I think it was an Air Force base in New Mexico. It was a whole class graduating of brand new F-16 fighter pilots. Could you give a shout out to the baby Viper drivers of this, you know, Air Force, you know, unit? And I was like, yeah, of course I'll do that. You know, so I gave him a shout out and, you know, he writes me back. He goes, you know, you're their hero now. And there were a lot of those. There was a lady out in the South somewhere that was saying, you know, I'm in a home, assisted living home. I think she's a paraplegic or something of that nature. And she was saying, every Friday we watch you, the whole home watches you.
Wow.
You know, so I didn't really think much about it until I started getting that kind of feedback where people were just saying, you know, thank you for what you're doing. You know, whether it was just something as simple as a birthday shout out or a shout out to this home in, I think it was Alabama somewhere, or the Air Force unit in New Mexico. But I think out of, you know, what is it, 14 months, probably 70 some odd weekends out of the shutdown, I might have done about 60 weekends worth of singing. And one of the things, you know, just, you know, to keep the chops up that you'd mentioned was that when I got back to singing, whether it was with Rough Cut, whether it was with just a cover band that I do on the side or a foreigner tribute, I noticed that singing this stuff was just way easier because, you know, you were as steady as possible. And look, the other thing is that a lot of people, you know, and you've heard it yourself. You've heard bands go up on stage, whether it's a cover band or, you know, karaoke somewhere in a bar. And you could tell when people take care of their vocals and when people don't. You just can. I mean, especially if this is what you do. I had to generally learn 20 songs for the next Friday coming up. I took it very seriously. So in between cleaning the house or doing what I was doing today, because I wasn't going a daytime job, you know, I was practicing these songs or doing scales or doing something just to try and work on my voice. So, you know, you created a work ethic, even if you weren't day working, I was still working to try and make sure that this sounded as good as possible when you got to hear it on a Friday night. You know, and I was like, I wasn't picking only easy stuff. I was trying to pick stuff that I had to work on. And I'd say as much in these concerts because I was talking in between songs.
Yep.
You know, letting people know, yeah, I'm scared to death of singing this one because it's not easy. You know, I always wanted to sing that song by Starship, Jane. And I think I did it twice during the COVID concerts. And then Saturday I was out in the desert, like I said, in 112 degrees of weather. And I sang Jane in the first set. And I was like, well, that was fun. You know? So for me, it was kind of exciting to be able to do that song, because it's not an easy song to sing. Well, maybe for him it is, but you know, for me, that was some work. But that's what I did. You know, that's what I did to you know, keep the chops up during the pandemic.
Right on. Any other advice for singers other than practice?
Just besides doing scales and stuff, there's, you know, it's interesting. Go to YouTube. There's a lot of really good teachers out there. Ken Tamplin. There's this guy, Ken Tamplin. I forget, you know, he was a Christian artist or something. I think he sang on a lot of studio stuff, but he has a Ken Tamplin Vocal Academy on YouTube. And yeah, it's not just about la 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 la. You know, it's not just about scaling and stuff like that. I've told people, I've noticed a lot of times it's about your tongue placement, your chin, where, you know, there's a lot of things that come into play when you're singing. You know, a lot of physical things, because your voice, you know, your vocal cords, your diaphragm, all of that, it all kind of works in conjunction with each other. And if you want to last, you've got to take good care of it, you know, and all of that stuff comes into play. A lot of body posturing, a lot of head and neck posturing, where you put your body, you know, where you put the stuff comes into play when you're doing this. And over time, with a lot of work, that's kind of what sets you apart. Just my opinion, but, you know, I've been doing this a long time. So hopefully my opinion carries weight for some people.
I would think it would. So that's really good advice. So we talked about a lot of people you've played with, and, you know, Mark Turian, obviously Rough Cutt, Sarge and the Motown Band, which we never actually named. It was Cagney and the Rats. Mm-hmm. Out of every performer who's ever set foot on a stage, living or dead, who would you most like to share the stage with that you haven't had the opportunity to yet?
Oh, gosh. That's tough. Queen? Honestly, Queen? I saw them 6 times, you know, between the 70s and into the early 80s. And just never a bad show. Always phenomenal. They just always brought it. I would have to say that would be the band. Not just an individual artist. It would have to be them as a unit. I mean, that was just such a great band. Such a great list of songs. They weren't just hard rock and songs. They were all kinds of different things. I mean, you know, think about songs like Another One Bites the Dust is an almost R&B song. You know, and you know me, Motown, I did R&B.
Yep.
You know, and it's funny. I mean, it's just because the list went all over the place, you know, at Motown. If you find that album, you know, Mark sang 2 songs on that album too. And that's when you really got to hear how much that kid shines on vocals. Well, kid, you know, to me, he's a kid. Everybody's a kid to me. But I got to work with Dennis Edwards of the Temptations. The Temptations did backgrounds on a few of the tracks on our album. I got to sing with Smokey Robinson, the second track on side one. Back then it was LPs, so you had sides. But I got to sing with Smokey Robinson on one of the songs. Junior Walker, you know, played sax on Urgent, the song Urgent. You know, he played sax on our album. I did not even know who Mary Clayton was for years. I found out by accident, but I sang with her on one of the tracks on that Cagney album. Aries, oh my God, you're singing with Mary Clayton. And I was acting excited. Was, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, don't know who that is. I found out later that, you know, she was one of these, you know, session singers that backed up people. But if you ever heard the song Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones, that's Mary Clayton.
At which she sang in the middle of the night. They pulled her out of bed into the studio.
I got to sing with Mary Clayton. Even if it was like one line, I got to sing with Mary Clayton. You know, later I you know, when I left Motown, Mark and I worked together. We had a band, St. James, and you know, that lasted, I think, about 8 months. And Mark left, and at the time, I think that's how Mark and Lonnie of the Bullet Boys, that's how they got together for the Bullet Boys, because Lonnie was the bass player at the time with me.
Oh, in St. James.
St. James, right. You know, and Lonnie lived in the same neighborhood as me. It, you know, we both grew up in Carson, South Bay area. And I was at a place in San Pedro, a club in San Pedro. And I was looking to audition bass players. And I just went down there to go see a band. And a few different bass players that happened to be there started approaching me and talking to me. And Lonnie just literally just walked up and said, "Steve, you don't need any of these guys." Right in front of them. He's just like, you know, because he was, you know, he was just larger than life, brash kid. And he's like, "You don't need any of these guys." He goes, "You just need to get me in there." And it's just like, "I'll tell you what, come down to such and such studios at such and such time on Thursday night. We're doing auditions. You know, here's a tape." And I'd still audition people, but ultimately he ended up with the gig. You know, Lonnie just fit the bill best. And then what happened was when Mark left, I had happened to meet CeCe DeVille at the Troubadour. He said, "Yeah, I'll play guitar with you." And he ended up playing guitar with me for about another 8 months. So it was almost a year and a half, 2 years that I worked with either Mark Turin or CeCe DeVille. And it was just a blast. You know, I mean, CeCe, the guy, he should have been, he could have easily been a stand-up comedian. I mean, to me, you know, just that guy always had you laughing, always had you laughing. Yeah, he was a trip.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to be talking to Mark Turian soon. At least I'm hoping to. My assistant's trying to set it up.
Cool.
Is there anything you would like me to ask him or say to him, or maybe a question I could put to him that kind of puts him on the spot in a good humored way?
You know what? Tell him I'd love to do a duet with him. I saw him at an iHeart music thing over, it was about 3-4 years ago. Who was it that went out? It was Jack Russell's Great White, Enough's Enough, and the Bullet Boys. And, you know, we were leaving, you know, when the show, a great show, all three bands. I had never seen Enough's Enough. And, you know, I know that they're talking about the original singer and Chip and whatever, but the version I saw was with Chip, and I had never seen the band, but I loved their song. So for me, I had a blast. I enjoyed it. And like you said, you know, I mean, look, here's the band with the name at the time. I saw them. I liked them. I had a great time. You know, Bullet Boys, you know, that's my bro up there singing. So of course I'm going to have a good time. And, you know, and Jack Russell and his Great White, they did a phenomenal job. I was walking downstairs leaving the House of Blues Anaheim, and Steve, you know, and it's Mark, you know, and he's like signing autographs and taking pictures with people, you know, big old bro hug, you know, and it was just cool. We chatted for a bit, and, you know, just like, you know, he's like, looks up, he goes, "This is the guy that got me into the music business." And everybody's like, "Come on, get, you know, can I get my, you know, get my autograph or whatever?" But, you know, it was just very, very familial, you know. We still, I think we had that connection, just really good vibe going on between the two of us. So yeah, it's just, you know, tell him it'd be fun to do a duet. You know, that guy's a great singer. Okay. He's got, you know, he's got a set of pipes on him, you know. You know, so it's just, you know, he's always fun. His drummer and I get along really well, Jimmy. You know, we always joke with each other. You know, he's a kick. So anyway, you know, tell him hi, give him a hug for me or something. Give him a virtual hug.
Okay. All right. So you're playing with Rough Cut in a few days. Let's see, Georgia and
a couple of weeks, yeah. July 31st in Atlanta, August 1st in Greensboro.
Right. Okay. Anything booked after that or any other plans?
With Rough Cut, I'm hearing talk, but, you know, again, I don't want to, you know, until it's set in stone, Yeah. You know, I don't want to say anything. Don't want to jinx it. You know, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that those happen. But yeah, there's a few.
Anything else booked with Urgent LA?
Oh God. Yeah, we've got the cover band. We're playing at a place out in Huntington Beach on the beach, which has become like a new hot place. That's, you know, a place called Sea Lakes out in Huntington Beach, which ought to be fun. That's August 21st. And then at the end of August, early September, Urgent is doing a show called Fiesta Hermosa in Hermosa Beach. Then I think a week later, we're doing Rock and Brews at San Manuel Casino on a weeknight. And then that Friday night, we're back out at the Rock Yard doing that show. Yeah, doing the Urgent show in the Rock Yard. Hopefully it won't be 118 degrees then.
Hopefully not.
Right. And, you know, for people out here, you know, Southern California, that, if you ever get a chance, that'd be that's a great place to see a show. In fact, Buhner flew out. I don't know if it was just for us, but, you know, he showed up with, you know, a few of our mutual friends, you know, and Cherie's filming, you know, we're singing at the Rock Yard. Jeff's going, "Are you filming this?" And she goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh, good." And he walked right in front of the camera, put his face in. You know? So I'll send it to you. I screenshot of that. And he's just looking in the camera, and you can kind of see like arms sticking out from his head from where he's making sure he blocked the shot. That was funny. But he's, Jeff's a good guy.
Yeah. And just for people who don't know, Jeff Buhner is the bass player in Rough Cut. He's also in the Loyal Order with another mutual friend of ours, Brandon Cook from Black and Blue.
Right.
Yeah. Great band. Local band. So, you know, they've got a special place in my heart, not just because I know all the guys, but also because they're from Portland.
Right. So, right. You know, it's funny. I bragged, and I don't know if it's true or not. I said, I think... Because I get up early, I get up at 5 o'clock, and I ended up seeing that when the actual album went on sale, I bought it. I said, "I think I bought it first. I think I got the first virtual copy of it." You know, I hope I did.
Nice.
But yeah, it was just got to support my friends. You know, I was never one of those guys a lot of the times, especially in the circles that we ran in the Sunset Strip. I'll get you a free copy. I said, please don't do that. I want to buy it. I'd rather buy it. I've always been one of those people that I don't care what other people do. That's their business. But for me, I like the idea of if you're putting out a product and you put your heart and soul into it, I don't want it for free. I want to buy it. It means that much more to me when I buy it. That's all.
I'm like that too. I'll either, I know a lot of musicians. It's easy enough to say, "Hey, put me on the list." But most of the time I will pay for a ticket. If I'm working the show, I'll get in,
Right.
A lot of times the venues, I know the venue owners, just be like, "Oh, well, this show's in your line of work here. You're on the list," or automatically things like that.
Yeah.
So I'll either buy the CDs or I'll buy a t-shirt, I'll buy something from the merch.
Something to support them. Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's hard enough now. It's still, it's not like, not like anybody's making millions of dollars on record sales anymore. It just, it doesn't work that way. So, for me, exactly what you just said. I like to support them any way I can. Plus, I love the t-shirts. I chop them up and make them stringers.
I did not get a Rough Cut shirt. I wonder if I can still order from the site. But for anybody who's listening, the websites are Rough Cut Official. And remember, Rough Cut has two T's in it. And and Urgent LA, urgent-la.com. So roughcutofficial.com, urgentla.com to find Stephen's bands. So
thank you.
Stephen St. James, thank you so much for spending a little time with me on the show.
Absolutely, man. No, this was a blast. It's always fun talking to you. Whether it's this or just private message, it's fun talking to you. I enjoy chatting with you, man. That's great.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, my daughter, she's like, "Which one is Pariah?" I said, "Remember the one with the long red hair that was out there in the t-shirt?" She's "That guy." She remembers as soon as I said the t-shirt, "That guy." It was great.
Yeah, it was hot. And I spent your entire set. So Darren had given me, he'd come up to me. He gave me his phone. He's like, "Hey man, can you do me a real favor? Can you just video us the whole time?" So I'm standing there literally with the amp to my head. And I had earplugs in, but still, you know,
it's not quiet.
And I'm, you know, just videoing the whole set.
Yeah. I've seen that video. Good video.
I was hot.
Yeah. I believe it. Yeah. For me, I walked outside and it was like, oh my God, I just stepped on a Pluto. it's so cold. Oh man. You know, then Dave, "Hey man, can you put this drum over here? Can you put this?" It's like, you know, just shut up. Go away. Let us load your drums and, you know, just be quiet. You should be doing this. I know, you know, he has a bad back. So it's like, okay, well, let's, you know, me and my family took care of it for him.
Well, that was nice of you.
We're nice people.
Keep Hard, Heavy, and Hair commercial free by becoming a Patreon supporter. At patreon.com/pariahrocks.
Remember, to hear the music discussed in this interview, stream the on-demand Hard, Heavy, and Hair show at pariahrocks.com.
That's PARIAHROCKS.com.
Also hit pariahrocks.com to stream or listen on a radio station near you. The regular two-hour Hard, Heavy, and Hair show with me, Pariah Burke. Hard, Heavy, and Hair is your weekly dose of hard rock, heavy metal, and hair bands from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 20-teens, and today, including the latest new releases, your old favorites, and deep cuts and rare hair, along with rock news and trivia.
This has been a Pariah Burke production, copyright 2021, pariahrocks.com. The home of Hard, Heavy, and Hair. Send requests, fan mail, and nude photos to Hard, Heavy, and Hair on pariahrocks.com. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @PariahRocks.